This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Here's what I want you to do. Think of the top three economic stories from this week. All right, you got them? Good. Now, hang on, and we'll see how your list matches up with ours. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Friday, today, the 8th of February. Good as always to have you along, everybody. This has been, if you ask me, kind of a big picture economic week, more macro than micro. But don't ask me. We've got people we talk to about that every Friday. The lucky winners this week are Kate Davidson from the Wall Street Journal. Sudeep Reddy is at Politico. They are both in our studios in Washington. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai. Hi,
Kai. Sudeep, let me start with you just for the heck of it. Test my thesis, test my premise. What do you think? Big picture versus micro week?
The state of the macroeconomy is strong. That line has never been uttered in a State of the Union. But the president did have a hearty paragraph where he got to brag accurately about low unemployment, higher wages, people across the spectrum, the demographic spectrum, the age spectrum, the gender spectrum, all getting jobs. That's all good. And obviously the big question is whether the president can sustain all of this for the coming months. If you can keep the economy afloat for just five more months, then you get to brag about having the longest expansion in American history. That's another brag line, even before the 2020 State of the Union.
Kate, it's so interesting that when you talk about the president bragging about the economy, you have to say brags accurately. Because as Sudeep points out, I mean, the president gets some share of the credit for what's going on.
I was going to say mostly accurately.
Okay, all right, okay. Well, go ahead.
Well, I mean, these are like fairly minor quibbles, but I was helping the Wall Street Journal team with our fact checking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the president said, I think 5.3 million jobs created since he became president. It's 5.1. You know, he said 600,000 manufacturing jobs. It's 425. But this is what the president does. But I guess some of us wonder why. As Sudeep pointed out, there are plenty of things to accurately brag about. But setting that aside for a minute, He pointed to the fact that there are a lot of women participating in the workforce. Women's workforce participation has gone up. We have low unemployment rates among Hispanics and African Americans. There's a lot that he could point to, but he conspicuously absent was any mention of the deficit, which deficits have gone way up. And also, he didn't acknowledge that a lot of forecasters are predicting the U.S. economy is going to slow in 2019. He said it was hotter than hot, basically hottest in the world, not even close. And that's not really true.
Okay, so that was, in fact, item one on my big picture list. So listeners out there, if you had that, put that on your bingo card. Number two, Sudeep, I want to get your sense of the global economy, the China trade negotiations. Secretary Mnuchin and Trade Representative Lighthizer are going to China next week. And the idea that we're kind of holding our breath, all of us, to see if the president and his staff can figure out this trade relationship, lest things go really sour.
Yeah, it's just like a tornado right in the middle of a beautiful landscape. Like, you don't know, like, is that going to come and destroy everything that looks pretty good right now? Or are we going to be able to drive away and avoid the storm in a moment like this? And the Chinese economy, obviously, like any point in the last decade, you could have found a reason to worry about the Chinese economy. That's going to happen. So.
It feels kind of more real now, Sudeep, though, doesn't it? That maybe this is kind of it?
It does, because you have this added complication. It's not just the Chinese economy. It's the Trump factor involving itself in the Chinese economy. And the Trump factor always involves some bit of uncertainty. And so the U.S. is inflicting wounds on itself fighting this battle, the trade war that the Trump team argues will lead to some to long-term gains, having some short-term pain. We're actually having casualties. You have them in the farming sector. You have them across the manufacturing sector. Companies are starting to recognize, oh, crap, this might not be as good as we thought it was going to be, and something's got to change. And so that's the nervousness animating the moment.
Okay, what's your sense of the nervousness? I'm figuratively holding my breath.
Yeah, well, we know that there are now top American business figures, if you will, that are pushing both sides to compromise and come together mm-hmm. because they're worried about the potential for a lack of a trade deal to undermine the economy, to roil financial markets. Apparently, Stephen Schwarzman, the CEO of Blackstone mm-hmm. Group, my colleagues at the Journal reported, he's been calling the White House and encouraging them to work things out. Former Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, he's, of course, a China expert.
Yeah.
He's been pushing as well.
Is there a sense the White House, though, Kate, is listening?
Well, I don't exactly know. I'm not as close to the story as some of my colleagues, but we have heard that advisors are still optimistic that something will come together. We're probably not going to see some big, broad, fully complete deal come out before the deadline. But outside advisors seem to think there will be some kind of limited pact that will allow them to come back to sort of these tougher issues later on.
Okay. All right. So that was number two on my list. Again, listeners, cross that off your bingo card. Number three for me, Sudeep, and I'll be curious to see what you think about this. Is the conversation that's happening in Washington now around some more, shall we say, progressive or way left-leaning economic ideas, the Green New Deal and how to spend for that, Senator Bernie Sanders and Chuck Schumer in their op-ed talking about stopping buybacks and the traction that they are trying to get for some of those ideas?
Well, obviously, none of these are going to take shape and become real policy in the next 2 years. What's interesting about this moment, having it in such a comically crowded presidential field, is that you can debate along a very wide spectrum of policy prescriptions. What is the right path to adopt to take on Trumpism? Like, what is the animating idea? And some of these ideas that look super crazy now, once people talk about them and get a little more of the details, they may not seem that crazy. Most people who are involved in this recognize movements take years, sometimes decades, to build, and this could be that part of that.
Kate, real quick, do you think economics is the way to take on Trumpism come 2020?
I don't know, Kai. That's a really interesting question. I would agree with what Sudeep said. It certainly feels like it's a moment. I think that for the reasons we laid out, the president has a pretty strong case. And as Sudeep said, just five more months, he'll be able to say that he was in office when we reached the longest expansion ever.
He's going to say more than he was just in office. Right? He's going to say it was all him.
Right.
I'm waiting for the tweet.
It was all
right?
him.
We can all write that tweet right now.
So I think that Republicans will push that strong case, and we'll just have to see how Democrats answer that.
Kate Davidson of the Wall Street Journal, Sudeep Reddy from Politico, both of them in our studios in Washington. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Kai.
Thank you.
Have a nice weekend. Wall Street, today things kind of faded as the week came to a close. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. If you thought shutting down the federal government was hard, and it was in a very real and disruptive to people's lives kind of way, restarting a monolith that big is no mean feat either. There are paychecks still not delivered for sure, but also a whole bunch of other unexpected delays, as Marketplace's Erica Barris reports.
When the shutdown ended on January 25th, affected government workers still had to wait for the next payday, which wasn't for another week. Tony Reardon is with the National Treasury Employees Union, which represents workers at 33 agencies, including the IRS, the EPA, and Customs and Border Protection. He says for those workers,
although it was a 35-day shutdown, it was really at least 42 days before folks ended up getting any pay at all.
And when they did get their pay stubs, lots of workers found they were incomplete or even for $0. J. David Cox, president of the American Federation of Government Employees, says that's because
the people that run the IT systems, the people that run the payroll systems, many of them were sent home, said you cannot work, you cannot read your email.
So when everyone went back to work, they found a backlog of everything.
It just creates a collapse.
Earlier this week, hundreds of FEMA employees still hadn't gotten their paychecks, so their union president, Steve Reeves, called the National Finance Center, which processes the agency's payroll, to find out what was going on.
There was an IT glitch in the pay system. So the volume of back pay that was submitted to the National Finance Center for the program that they run on default wasn't able to handle the volume of pay requests that were submitted at the same time.
For lots of government employees, checks were cut today. David Verardo works at the National Science Foundation. Since the shutdown, he's gotten paid in two lump sums, both of them short. He got his remaining back pay today, but also...
It looks like they took out the federal taxes for all three paychecks all in one lump sum.
He's trying to get that figured out before the next potential shutdown. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
There's a subsidiary of Volkswagen that's putting big money into electric vehicles. Not cars, but charging stations for those cars. $2 billion to build thousands of high-speed chargers that'll be able to juice up the newest cars in about 10 minutes or so. And yes, it sounds like an infrastructure story. It kind of is, but really, it's more about consumer psychology. Marketplace's Scott Tong has that story from the Sustainability Desk.
This investment tries to calm what's called range anxiety, the fear that your electric car can't veer too far from the plug. It's a little like phone charge anxiety, says David Sandalo at the Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia.
If you're out and about, you want to know that you can recharge the battery if you need it, and that's why public charging infrastructure for vehicles is so important.
VW's subsidiary, Electrify America, just announced $500 million in new charging stations as part of a total investment of $2 billion. Charges will go in near highways and in cities, never more than 120 miles apart. VW agreed to this as part of a government settlement after admitting to cheating on emissions testing. Analyst Sam Jaffe at the firm Cairn Era says this brings competition to car charging, currently dominated by Tesla.
The significance of this Electrify America announcement is that they are a true competitor to Tesla. That's going to open the gates for others.
By one industry estimate, electric vehicle sales grew 81% last year. And to juice this sector on, Electrify America is not just installing stuff.
Meet George Jetson!
It's messaging with this commercial, a knockoff of the Jetsons cartoon show called The Jetstones.
His boy Elroy!
With instant acceleration, electric cars are more fun to drive and more affordable than ever.
It all comes as electric car technology is going through its own breakthroughs. Chris Nelder is with the Rocky Mountain Institute.
The battery capacity of vehicles is going up. The charging speed of charging stations is going up. The range is going up.
Just as the energy infrastructure starts to plug in too. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Prime Minister Theresa May is on the road again, Dublin today, trying to end the deadlock over Brexit. The big sticking point, other than May's colleagues in the British Parliament and the European Union itself, is what's called the Irish backstop, the land border between British Northern Ireland and European Ireland. The deal at hand, the one that May has already negotiated, would commit the UK to staying in the EU's customs union. So there is no hard border, no customs inspections, no tariffs, no delays between the two. It is, yes, an economic issue, but also one that could have real political and security implications, as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports from the European desk.
In Brussels this week, the Irish Prime Minister stood tall on the European stage. Leo Varadkar proudly declared the EU still unanimously backs the backstop.
We agreed again today that it's needed as a legal guarantee to ensure that there's no return to a hard border on the island of Ireland.
And he could not resist a sideswipe at Britain's political shambles.
I think the events in London and the instability in British politics in recent weeks demonstrates exactly why we need a legal guarantee.
On this issue, Varadkar has the overwhelming support of Ireland's politicians and public. There's a widespread concern there that if Britain leaves the EU without a trade deal, it could reignite the paramilitary war over the status of Northern Ireland, as Lieutenant Colonel Michael Murphy of the Irish Defence Forces explained in an interview with the BBC.
You would have to bring back customs posts somewhere along the border, along the main roads.
And that physical infrastructure, he said, could once again become a target for paramilitaries.
And then if that was ratcheted up again, then you'd have to bring in the military right along the border once again to prevent the terrorists from succeeding in what they wish to do.
Hence the backstop to prevent the re-emergence of physical border checks between the north and south. But there may be another way of achieving the same goal.
You can move away from the borders and do the checks, the information gathering and the controls in other places.
That's Lars Karlsson, a former director of the World Customs Organization. He advocates the smart or invisible border using a combination of trusted trader registration, cell phone and GPS tracking to check trade flows and levy tariffs.
Instead of doing all these formalities by the border, you actually do them at the exporter's premises in a simplified way, at the importer's premises in a simplified way.
Trucks do not have to be stopped necessarily at the border.
That is correct.
The EU dismissed this as magical thinking, but Karlsson says many of these techniques are already in use around the world and were successfully tested in an EU trial involving Norway and Sweden.
That worked very well. And again, remember, that was done under the European Union customs law and with the scrutiny and supervision of the European Union institutions.
Brexiteers claim this proves the backstop is a cynical ploy to use the issue of peace to lock the UK permanently into the EU's customs union. And it could yield a political benefit for Prime Minister Varadkar.
This is Leo Varadkar's drive to win an election.
Lord Bew, a British academic historian from Northern Ireland, believes that Varadkar is whipping up anti-British nationalist support for his fragile minority government. Bew wrote a paper for the policy exchange think tank attacking the backstop.
Ireland now has got itself a new mode of operating in Europe, which is very satisfying because now you're beating up the old historical adversary.
Brit bashing.
Brit bashing is what they call it.
Mind you, with the British Parliament in turmoil over Brexit and with the British government in disarray, the Brits seem to be doing a pretty good job of bashing themselves. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Coming up,
you have to be there or you're like a ghost on the industry, you know?
The digital music industry, be there or be ghosted. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's off 0.25% today, 63 points, 25,106 for the blue chips. The NASDAQ up 0.1%, almost 10 points, ended things at 72.98. The S&P 500 basically flat, 27.07. For the 5 days gone by, the Dow up 0.1%, the NASDAQ up 0.5%, the S&P 500 again flat for the week. Volkswagen, which we heard about from Scott Tong's story, is down 1.7% today. Ford, though, up almost 1%. Tech stocks, kind of a mixed bag. Netflix up 0.8%. Facebook up 0.5%. Google, also known as Alphabet, down 0.3% today. Amazon down 1.6% with news reports it's reconsidering its decision to base half of the new headquarters, known as HQ2, in New York City. Also, there's that other story. You're listening to Marketplace. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Ruzdahl. Do me a favor, check out the latest episode of Make Me Smart. Maybe you've heard about that egg, the one that went viral on Instagram. Well, before it cracked during the Super Bowl, advertising rights related to it worth $10 million, it's reported. Yeah, we're getting smart about memes, those cute little things that you share on the internet. They found a market.
It's one of these things where if, like, money can be made, money will be made.
Make Me Smart. Check it out.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ruzdahl. You talk innovation and you think high tech and digital and cutting edge kind of things, right? What about burritos? Frozen burritos. At that, I mention it because ConAgra, the packaged foods conglomerate, is said to be working on some layoffs, about 100 people or so, at one of its facilities in Colorado. I also mention it, though, because by next year, packaged foods is expected to be a $3 trillion industry worldwide. And if you ain't innovating in a market that big, you're losing. Marketplace's Renata Sago explains.
Consumers want healthier food these days. You know, plant-based proteins and items you can scoop up along the perimeter of the grocery store. The desire for fresh has packaged food industry giants hungry to stay relevant. Brittany Weissman, a consumer analyst at Edward Jones, says that's why companies like ConAgra are going for new.
They created new Power Bowl lines on Healthy Choice. They upped the quality of ingredients in a lot of their frozen offerings, and they updated the packaging.
Another approach? Big packaged food companies are buying up smaller companies. ConAgra acquired the natural foods line Boulder Brands through its purchase of Pinnacle last year. Campbell bought bottled juice maker Bolthouse Farms in 2012 with the same intention. Food industry analyst Phil Limpert says big packaged food companies have even launched their own startups.
And frankly, they've failed.
He says some companies are simply putting money into newer companies. Tyson Foods, the meat producer, is now an investor in the plant-based protein company Beyond Meat.
They're giving funding, they're giving facilities to these small startups in lieu of taking a little piece of the company, hoping that they'll be a success.
Outside of acquisitions, mergers, and investments, big packaged food companies are partnering with universities to do new agricultural work. Bert Flickinger, the third of Strategic Resource Group.
The brands are definitely looking to the institutions for innovation.
ConAgra did not respond to requests for comment about its layoff plans. Its deal with Pinnacle Foods was valued at nearly $11 billion. I'm Renata Sago for Marketplace.
The music business in this digital economy is overwhelmingly streaming. That's the obvious part, right? The perhaps less obvious part of that, though, is that according to Spotify, one of the biggest music streaming companies, Mexico City is a hotbed of digital music. It's Spotify's biggest market, in point of fact. Amazon Music launched there last year as well, which is great for artists in Mexico who want to be heard, but it's also a business opportunity for marketers and promoters. From KJZZ, their Mexico City Bureau Chief Rodrigo Cervantes reports.
In a small yet extremely packed venue, everyone sings along with Josue Guijosa, also known as the folk rock artist Kill Aniston. Guijosa says it's a crowd built not by selling records, but through social media and streaming platforms.
The playlists are the new thing, you know, like it's the new radio.
Kill Aniston has been streaming on Spotify since 2016. His Spotify data show over 1 million plays and more than 150,000 followers in 62 countries.
Digital music right now is the thing. Like, you have to be there or you're like a ghost on the industry, you know?
Guijosa started to play decades ago when big record labels controlled the market, something he always disliked. Streaming music gives him freedom, exposure, and royalties. Still, there's something he misses.
The thing that I don't like from the streaming is that now you don't have to do albums. You just do singles. So for me, it's kind of sad, you know?
But those singles can have a broad reach. And advertising companies are also using digital streaming to connect audiences, artists, and brands.
Mexico City is this major metropolitan, contemporary place. And the music reflects that.
That's Samantha Parvin, owner of a marketing and music agency in Mexico City. Parvin Music has worked with major brands such as Corona Beer and emerging indie talents like the band Sotomayor. Parvin says corporations want more ears and eyeballs on their brands, and streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, or YouTube are bringing in the big audience numbers.
It's definitely a growing market, especially in the world of advertising.
And someone who has witnessed the evolution of the music industry in Mexico is Camilo Lara. He's a producer, former director of a record label, and co-owner of a music company called Cassette. This song is one of many from his project called the Mexican Institute of Sound, which constantly tours around the U.S. It was used in Pixar's Coco, where an animated DJ was modeled after Lara.
It's been a learning curve to try to discover how it's going to behave, the whole music business.
Lara says he owns around 45,000 vinyls and 55,000 CDs, but mainly listens to streaming music now. As technology has changed the way music is distributed, his company focuses on the artist and not on the medium.
Instead of putting together a traditional record label, we decide to just offer the tools to make your own independent label.
Lara's company gets a cut of the digital distribution income for the artist he manages, but allows them to keep their own copyrights.
If you don't own your rights, basically you don't have anything.
And thanks to a growing international digital profile, Mexican artists are starting to get gigs and sponsors outside their homeland, like Gil Aniston, who toured in Spain last year. In Mexico City, I'm Rodrigo Cervantes for Marketplace.
Final note on the way out today, a worthy use for all the precious metals and all those zillions of electronic devices that get tossed every year. The Tokyo Olympic Organizing Committee, the 2020 Summer Games are going to be there. The committee has announced it has met its goal to collect enough metal from recycled electronics, smartphones, laptops, all those things, to make all the medals that will be awarded at the Games, which I think is cool. All right, we got to go. Dow Industrials off 0.25%, 63 points. The NASDAQ up 0.1%. That's almost 10 points. S&P 500 basically unchanged. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Our executive editor is Evelyn LaRubria. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will see you again on Monday. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.